I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and MLB.com. And welcome to our Friday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. The feedback we're getting is you're having as much fun listening to it as we are doing it. And it's on days like this that it's really fun. We are looking ahead to a weekend of Wimbledon finals. We are looking ahead to the World Cup. And it's we're down to two. Croatia, Mr. Ryan's pick, and Zach Lupica's pick, who made a 60-1 opinion on Croatia at the start of the tournament.
And, not a bet. 61 bet would have been a lot better.
We don't endorse betting, Mitch.
Well, you were in England. It was all legal.
And made some money. Croatia won an extremely dramatic. I mean, if England didn't feel bad enough having Trump come to visit this week, now their hopes are dashed by Croatia. But boy, have we been talking about this team for 2 weeks, Mitch and Bob. In the parlance of baseball, it is now official what a tough out the Croatian side is.
Yeah, the Brits had it going their way for a while. And, of course, there was a gorgeous free kick by Trippier, whatever his name is. But a beautiful free kick. And the Brits had a second chance. And Harry Kane will probably wake up for a long time.
That's the play, Bob. And Mitch, is that... Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. He took so much time, Bobby. He acted like he had all day, and then he didn't elevate the ball.
We've seen versions of that in America where the superstar carries a team all the way to the end and then does not have the game that everybody expects when it counts the most. I think Harry Kane fell in that category.
But the team that should have won one, and I guess from what I gather, even the Brit fans, rational ones, who acknowledge that that's going to be the fallout in the end, is that this was a surprise march to the semifinals, and I think that the country won't look as ill, down on them as in years past when more ballyhooed English teams flopped. This wasn't a flop, right? You wouldn't go to. I hate seeing the word choke on one of the tabs in New York.
I wouldn't call it a choke, but I would call it a missed opportunity. Well, they
sure
had
was.
Many chances. In the end of the 120 minutes, you say Croatia was the better team to have won. But early on, England was, and if they had scored a second goal, of which I counted at least three chances they had, this game would have been over. So, if I'm a Brit fan, I'm not particularly happy, but I don't call it a choke. A choke is like it's sitting right there and you just couldn't live up to it. They just didn't convert on some goal opportunities that they had. I thought it was Kane's worst game. And I do think they missed a golden opportunity here. I really do. And what we won't know about Croatia or England until Sunday is played is how much this side of the draw was a benefit to either one of the two teams. Because you look at Croatia, they're going to be heavily underdogged going into this game against France. And that frequently is when the underdog delivers. But they played Denmark, Russia, and England, all of which went to extra time before they finally got rid of them. That's not exactly murderer's row. And you wonder if they were playing Belgium, if they were playing Brazil, would they be in the final? So how much of this is the bracket and how much of this is just a fantastic and resilient Croatian team? We'll find out on Sunday.
Mitch, I don't remember whether it was you or Bob who said the other day, we're going to find out if the other side of the draw and the Brazils and the France, and if Brazil-France in particular, was the Rockets against the Warriors. But I just, I keep watching this Croatian team. And whether you are a fan of what they call football and we call soccer or not, I mean, that first goal the other day, after all the headers we've seen, we've seen all of those headers. So I don't know how he got a leg on the ball and was able to redirect it in traffic in midair. That's one of the best plays I've seen in the entire tournament.
I actually thought it was a header at first. I just assumed, as you said, Mike, every time we've seen so many of these headers, that that cross led to a header. And of course, right. When I saw the replay, wait a minute, it was his leg, wasn't his head? Yeah. It was a fantastic contortion.
Only in soccer can your head and your leg be at the same level.
No kidding, but it was a beautiful, beautiful goal.
I'll tell you where I think this will. A lot of it's maybe going to come down to is going to be the Croatian goalkeeper Subasic. Is, I mean, this guy's out of his mind. And you know, they say that in hockey, a goalie will steal you a series. Mm. Can a hot goalie steal you a World Cup? He has had. I mean, he's been incredible in shootouts. He's stopped a number of goals during the course of the game that you would think, you know, wow, I thought that one was going in. And, of course, France has a good it's Hugo Lloris, I think is how he pronounces it. He's a really good goalkeeper, too. I've seen scores predicted like 3-1, 4-1 for this final, which is – that's like saying, you know, the Warriors will win in the series in three games. You know, so I don't know if it's going to be that lopsided. I would love to see Croatia win this just because I'd like to see somebody new win a World Cup. But I'd like to see a nation of 4 million people, you know, what's that, like a third the size of New York City, win the World Cup against a nation with almost 70 million people.
And obviously the stakes are tremendous for everybody on the global stage on Sunday. But for any individual, guys, Are they bigger than they are for Kylian Mbappe, who is a teenager who is, you know, he's playing, he's not Ronaldo yet, he's not Messi, but he has played himself into that conversation. And if he is the star of this game on Sunday, wow, does his life change.
Yeah. Croatia, let me go back to them for a second. It's a sport that they first attained international prominence was basketball. You recall they were the first victims in the final victim of the Dream Team in '92. Actually led them. They're the only team that actually had a lead on them for one possession. But basketball was a sport, and I honestly was unaware until, you know, recent times that they were that prominent in football. But the idea that they're still good in basketball, and that's they've given us some tennis players. They're a very sporty nation. You know, give them full credit.
You have some great contrast in this thing to the coaches, Didier Deschamps, who's the only one on that team with an actual French name, I believe. he goes all the way back to 1998, and you know, was the captain of that team that won. And then on the other side, Zlatko Dalic never played for his country. I mean, he never played in a World Cup team, and he only took over like last fall. And before that, he coached like all over the Middle East. So you got a lot of contrast here. I love their star player, whose name I can never pronounce, but you know who he is for Croatia.
Mudic.
Yeah, and he looks like Tom Petty. And by the way, for looks like, we just have to address, even though we were talking about Harry Kane. I think, Mikey, this one might have been when you weren't here. And Bob and I were scratching our heads over, who does he look like? Who does he look like? Who does he look like? God, he looks like somebody. God. And then when we got off the air, we realized that he looks like Ryan Gosling. And we need to say that because I actually got an email from someone who said, Ryan Gosling, what's the matter with you guys?
I got plenty of them, Mitch, right after we got done. And people sending me photos and matchups. It definitely was Ryan Gosling, and people were right on top of it for us.
So Ryan Gosling for them there, and then Luka Modric is Tom Petty. So we've got that established. You know, we have to Americanize everything. We don't know these guys' names. So if the guy who looks like Tom Petty, he's great. That guy.
Then we have to hope that there are no hearts broken as a result of this.
And Mandzukic is not bad. Am I pronouncing that correctly? He's not a bad player. But Ryan, when you this Ryan Gosling thing, Ryan, do you not always say there are looks likes? And there are reminds you of.
Oh, I do.
Now,
is that a
reminds you of or a looks like?
Right. No, there's the different categories. Absolutely. Dead look-alike is one thing, but reminds me of. And sometimes, you know, it's very close. It's in the middle. But I knew from the start. I said, Harry, this guy drives me. It was driving me crazy. I mentioned it last week to Mitch. I can't get who it is. And you know, then you go, oh, you know, when you see the picture. It was Ryan Gosling.
He's got a little Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, someone sent that picture out there, too. And I'm not buying it. That's a more distant reminds me of. Not
reminds
as
me.
You know, my favorite commentary about when we're looking at what are supposed to be upsets or shot in the dark wins. It was in 83 in Albuquerque after the semifinals. And I think I've told you guys this before. And I'm walking out of the Sunday press conferences with Jimmy Valvano. And he says to me, did you hear some of those questions? They don't think I've got a chance tomorrow night. He said, I got to have a chance. There's only two teams left. Right. It's why I brought two suits with me. And then he went through the whole roster. He says, does Kentucky have a chance? No. Does UCLA have a chance? No. Does Notre Dame have a chance? No. So how big an upset with these two teams and what we've seen from Croatia, will it be a massive upset if Croatia wins this match on Sunday?
Yes.
You say that?
Yes. No, yes. So. Yes. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. Yes, it will. I mean, in the world of soccer, it absolutely will. This will go down. If Croatia wins, this will go down as a huge upset. And just because Croatia has played well in their games over the last three games, first of all, they keep going to extra time. You know, you keep waiting for them to run out. They're not beating teams 4-1. And when you go back to the world rankings and you go back to where they started and you go back to France and how good a team France has, yes, this will be a huge upset. I mean, they're a tiny nation. We were talking about Uruguay with 3 million people. Croatia only has a million more. You know, they haven't been in existence that long. I think it would go down as a huge, huge upset. I think they would be, well, they wouldn't be the smallest nation, obviously, to win a World Cup, but they would be the smallest one in a while.
Well, we know that they would be if they are to triumph the first significant. Tell me, would it not be the first significant major team competition victory for some country formed out of the former Yugoslavia? I don't think Serbia has won anything prominent. I don't think. I know Croatia has, and I know Croatia has been a good basketball nation, as has Serbia, but they haven't won anything on the level.
And Bobby and Mitch. It's one of the reasons why Djokovic, who is comebacking at Wimbledon, he's a huge – he has become such a symbol, especially when he was on top, for the Serbians. And this will be no different from Croatia. All right, I'm looking at the odds now, and you guys know more about this than I do, and Korsak does too, okay? France opened the cup at plus 650 while Croatia was plus 3,300. Okay, and the odds now for France to win minus 210, Croatia plus 175. So I don't know how to break that down into...
It means France is a heavy favorite. It means France is a heavy favorite. Okay, let me put it in English for you. You got to put down a lot of money to make any money off of betting France.
Two things we're talking about always with odds and underdogs and bettings, guys. We're talking about the odds, which, you know, betting is about the setting a spread that will get equal play on both sides. That's the goal.
Right, right.
That's one thing, but the reality of the football, forget the betting. The football team that France has and the one that Croatia has, it wouldn't be that monumental an upset. I'm sorry. Just because the general public doesn't
Mitch,
get it.
Mitch,
the,
when you
the
look,
insiders of soccer, I would love to know. I'm almost guaranteed would say, no, it's not a huge upset. This is a damn good Croatian team.
Go back and look at the Super Bowl. Okay, and I still feel right through the result of that game that the Eagles were hiding in plain sight on us the whole season, even after Wentz got hurt. And we've talked about this. They were deeper on both sides of the ball, and then when the quarterback made it a fair fight, they won. So, Mitch, my question about France is, and again, I am in no way a World Cup expert, okay? But coming into the tournament was France as big a good a bet as like Brazil was or the defending champs Germany were?
They were a strong team. Yeah, they were. They were a strong team. Nobody is surprised that France is here. Nobody. And they are surprised that Croatia is here. And even soccer-wise, Bob, I'd say if you line these teams up, and we're not expert at it, I'm not certainly not presenting myself that way, but I think if you line these teams up on X's and O's and said, okay, the defense, the offense, the midfield, the goalie, France would get the tick on every one of them in terms of superior talent. Now, in terms of who has gutted it out, yeah, Croatia, you can't deny their path here. They've gutted out wins. That also may be the thing that hurts them. They've played a lot of 120-minute games here. And their older guys are, if you looked at the end of that England game, you know, it looked like some people were just walking up the beach at the end, the older players. So
and they've had
that takes its toll.
And they had another fewer day, you know.
One less day rest.
So, that could be a very big factor. I mean, it could be, very definitely be.
Mike, to answer your question, this is maybe not, it's not Golden State, but it's certainly Houston. In terms of, can you be shocked that they're in the finals? Whereas, and I don't know who exactly you would say would be better. I mean, you know, Brazil didn't have that strong a team this year. All the reigning, Germany was a big surprise. And a lot of people thought they would do better. But Argentina was a flawed team. I thought Brazil was a flawed team. Spain, you know, a lot of Italy didn't even make it this year. A lot of the traditional powerhouses weren't there. Belgium, they were my pick.
They went out
one game shot. But France did beat Belgium. That's my point. France beat Belgium. And Croatia has eked by teams like Denmark. And England was better than they thought. But I just don't think they've played against the same competition over the last couple of weeks. And I think it's going to show.
And Mitch and Bob, you know me. I'm always looking for the positives in things. Am I not? I mean,
we call you Mr. Positivity.
Thank you, Mitch.
Not to your face.
And I look for silver linings. And here's the silver linings playbook, even in the despair of the country that I just left, England, okay? If England had been in the World Cup final on Sunday afternoon, what would center court at Wimbledon have looked like Sunday afternoon during the gentlemen's final while the country was playing France for the World Cup?
I hadn't thought of that. Would that have been at the same time?
It would have been. I think the game will be at 4:00, if I'm not mistaken. I think 4:00 London time.
Which would have been 11 in the morning here. Yeah.
About an hour and 45 minutes into the men's, the gentlemen's final.
I wanted to find out. I wanted to, we talked about the idea of the television and the TV's not on in Henman Hill and all that. Oh, my God, it would have been wonderful to find out.
Well, I do think that France-England would have been just a tremendous thing for us to watch and to root for. But before we walk away from this and move on to other topics, I think I'm speaking for all of us when I say this has been an absolute blast to observe. And we didn't even have a rooting interest. There was no American team in this event. And it has been, I'm going to miss this come next week. I'm going to miss the routine of either trying to watch live in the middle of the day or trying to stay away from websites so that I come home at night and can enjoy it. And just learning about, we're in the business of being experts in sports. All of us together have put in decades in the sports world. And so we're used to sort of being on the side of things, of being expected to know a lot about. This has been a joy, not only because of the competition, but at least for me, to be learning, to be young in the process and to be learning about these other teams and to be delighted to find out the stuff that you do. So I have become 100% bona fide World Cup fan. Not to the extent that I'll fly to Qatar in 4 years, because I have thought about it, going to it, but I said, maybe I'll wait 8 years and it'll be. But
go to Jersey. Go to MetLife Stadium in Jersey in 8 years. But Mitch, you're 100% right. And the only thing, Bobby and Mitch, that I will compare this to, and we're used to our playoff seasons in hockey and basketball in this country going on and on. Baseball still gets it done in a month. But to me, this whole competition has felt like, if it's the NBA, we got a buzzer beater just about every day, or we got a walk-off home run just about every day. And Mitch, you're 100% right. I'm going to miss these games. I am.
But I've got a new phrase in my head now for the rest of the year. Set piece.
Set piece?
Yes.
Set piece. All right, listen, before we move on to the national pastime in our country, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by our friends at Peter Millar. Peter Millar was founded in 2001 with a single cashmere sweater and has grown into a premium American lifestyle brand featuring a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, and luxury performance golf apparel. The key focus of this integration is Peter Millar's comfort, fit, quality, and style. They are setting the standard in menswear, and believe me, I speak from experience. Recently, because I'm special, I have been receiving all of my style tips from the clothing experts at Peter Millar. If you're a golfer like me, you know the name. If you don't, you should, because Peter Millar is all about quality, value, and style. It's the most comfortable clothing I've ever worn. Mitch, you have to take this on faith. It's really, really comfortable, especially the stuff they've sent me.
I look at you and I say, that man is comfortable.
I'm comfortable. Right, not too comfortable, just the right amount of comfortable. Right now, I am wearing their performance shorts. What I love about these Peter Millar shorts is they offer so much comfort, Mitch, so much comfort and style no matter what I'm doing. I can do a... they're moisture wicking. Yeah, yeah. And when's the last time you were moisture wicked, Mitch? No, I don't think so lately.
That's not something breathable. I share in a podcast, to be honest. Keep that to myself.
And quick drying. Plus, they have a stretch waistband, Mitch, so they move with you. That because if they move without you, that's a whole different kettle of fish. That makes them perfect for playing a round of golf, taking care of chores around the house, anything you'll be doing this weekend, and they're easy to take care of. You can throw them into your washer and dryer. You'll never want to wear your old shorts again. The performance shorts I'm wearing are the most comfortable pair of shorts I have ever worn. I can say that about everything I've ever worn from Peter Millar. Shirts, even shoes and pants. And right now, you can head over to petermillar.com/sportsreporters to check out some of my Peter Millar favorites. Be sure to use my link and you'll receive complimentary shipping and a free hat. Mitch, you think about this. That's Peter Millar, MILLAR.com/sportsreporters, petermillar.com/sportsreporters. Okay, we are moving up. You know, it's so funny that we used to call the All-Star Game the Midsummer Classic, but we're far past the midpoint in the baseball season. I mean, the Red Sox are now 66-29. But there are so many interesting stories as we go into next week in Washington. And guys, you take them in any order of importance. Bryce Harper is still hitting under 220. Jacob deGrom who has on balance pitched better than anybody this year, may or may not be made available. And the big rumor of the week is that the Yankees, who think they might not be able to get a star starting pitcher, might just decide, okay, let's see if we can bludgeon our way to the World Series and are in talks about Manny Machado.
Well, I guess, where to begin?
I'll go in inverse. I think that the Harper thing, you know, this is Scott Boras once again taking front and center on something. And as we were saying off the air before we got started, it's nice to know that there's only one guy in baseball being affected by the shift, right? One guy. Oh, brother. I mean, I don't even want to.
It's so wrong.
There was a very interesting story that was done this week in which some more cerebral players were interviewed about it, left-handed hitters, Daniel Murphy among them. And the explanation is as to why they don't bunt. Or try to slap little things down the left field line as opposed to going against the shift, and because it's exactly what the opposition wants them to do, kind of thing. But it was very interesting to read about that and see the theory about it. But it is an issue. I mean, there's no question it's an issue. But I mean, I am philosophically opposed to legislating against it. I don't know how you gentlemen feel.
Well, let's stay on Harper for a second here. Yeah. A human being versus a shift. I do think that, and by the way, I'm going to refer to you, Mike, from here on in as Mr. Moisture Wicking, because I think you're singularly identified that way. A lot of people have the name Mike, but yeah. Mr. Moisture Wicking, no one will ever wonder who I'm speaking to. So thanks for taking care of that. But Bryce Harper, I think there's a lot of things coming together right now for him. Obviously, he's on the lip of what would be the biggest free agent contract that he will have signed to this point in his career. Maybe, given his age, going to be the biggest one of his career. And that has to sit on somebody's mind, especially when they get off to a bad start. Number two, Bryce Harper's strength is now his weakness, and it's always been the same. He's stubborn. He's bullheaded. And, you know, that's good in sports. I mean, I watched Kirk Gibson for years basically be defined by that. You know, he had a swing that was out of, you know, everything wrong with it, and yet he just powered balls over the fence. Well, Bryce Harper has always kind of been that way, but now he seems to be basically, if I don't hit a home run, it wasn't worth getting up at bat. And so you look at his where is he now? 220. Okay, hitting under 220.
He's 213 after last night's
213.
Game.
213. I mean that puts you really low in the National League. 213. And yet, you know, he's got enough home runs to be what, third or so, right around there, in third home runs. He's on a pace to strike out like 160, 170 times, which would blow up what he used to do. And yet he has basically said, if I hit 230 and I get 40 home runs, I'm cool. You know, so this is his approach. He's swinging for the fences every time he gets up. Look, guys have off years, but will Bryce Harper, and I think this is the question, as you go into the All-Star game, and of course he was supposed to be like hosting the All-Star game, and you know it's there in Washington, but all right, that's just coincidence. Does this hurt him when he hits the market? I mean, do people start to think, okay, there's other seasons like this in Bryce Harper's life, or do they think, no, 2018 is always going to be the anomaly?
You know, Mitch, all right, I'm looking at his stat line right now. He's scored 57 runs. He has 23 home runs, 53 RBI in 92 games, 213. His OPS is, by his standards, an extremely modest 840. Okay, his on-base percentage, 367, slugging, 473. I don't, wasn't it about 20 minutes ago that we were hearing he was going to be the first $400 million baseball player? And wasn't it about 25 minutes ago that it was supposed to be Trout and Bryce and then everybody else? Well, that ship has sailed. I do believe, Mitch, you cited this in passing just a moment ago, the most important number for the teams looking at Bryce Harper is still this. He is 25 years old, okay? So this isn't Miguel Cabrera signing a big contract at 30. Mm-hmm. This isn't Pujols doing this. This isn't even Cano signing his with the Mariners when he did. He's 25 years old. So that makes this not a unique set of circumstances, but a pretty attractive one. But how can he come out of this season? Let's say he hits 228 this year. How can that not affect what somebody's going to pay him when he hits the market?
Well, you say that because we are still old guys who have certain standards of baseball numerology in our heads as being important. And the new breed of Ivy League trained baseball, Bill James pup nerdy guys, they could care less about batting average. The batting average per se independent they don't care. So I don't be so sure that that's it. They see other metrics that they like about him.
Well, batting average combined with high strikeout rate. You don't think just in the basic, I understand that there are computers that can run circles around all of us analyzing baseball, but in the basic understanding of baseball, if you come to the plate and you barely get on base unless you hit a home run and you frequently strike out, therefore not putting the ball even in play to advance a runner or anything like that, that's not a bad thing? That somehow has now become okay?
Well, strikeouts, we know strikeouts themselves are okay. That's been, you know, that's the whole dialogue of baseball now, that the strikeouts are not the shameful thing that they once were. No,
they're not shameful, but they don't actually add to anything. That part hasn't changed.
It means you stayed out of the double play, Mitch. That's one good thing.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's a positive. In addition to the home runs, if you get a few doubles and your slugging percentage is still respectable, you know, and you walk, you know, you can walk and you can be a big strikeout guy and a big walk guy. How's he doing in walks? Tell me, because
I will tell you. You know, I'm glad you asked me that, Bob. He has walked. Wait a minute, how many times has he walked this year? I told you his on base percentage.
Yeah, which is what
is. is 367.
Well,
oh, but he's walked 78 times.
That so tells he me has, he's walking. Mitch, I'm telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, no, but yeah, I was talking to Buck Showalter about him the other day, and people do look at that. Okay, so he's walked 78 times, and he has 68 hits. But I do think, Mitch, you're right about one thing, okay? He's willing to settle now. He will swing at more bad pitches. We will always wonder how, if he came, as Yogi used to say, when you come to a fork in the road, take it, okay? That weekend, what, nearly 2 years ago when Joe Maddon said, I'm going to walk him every single time. Okay. It was almost like a line of demarcation at that point. And I'm not saying he hasn't been a great player since then. He has mostly been a great player when he's been healthy. Okay. But Bob, are you saying, and by the way, thank you for that masterclass tutorial. Well, he stays out of the double plays. I was worried you were going too fast for me. Bobby, is the win for a starting pitcher now going to get lumped in with batting average? Is things that no longer matter the way they used to in baseball?
It already is. It already is in the higher
circles
of baseball.
Isn't that something?
Wins and even ERA. You know, it's about FIP. It's not about ERA. I'm serious. It's about FIP.
I know.
Field independent pitching. I mean, no, they don't talk about ERA. Boris isn't selling any pitching clients on the basis of ERA. He's selling them on FIP.
I don't know. There's still basic math.
I'm telling you.
If you're closer to 200 than 330, then one out of five times you come up, something good happens, and the other four it doesn't, versus one out of three times. I'm sorry, but you can analyze things all you want. You still have to come up to the plate and do something in certain situations. And batting average reflects that in a very abstract kind of way, that you come up and you get a hit of some kind. Now walks do matter, and he does walk a lot. And I think a lot of this stuff with Bryce Harper, let's be honest, give him a little credit. He's gotten pitched around his whole career. Mm. You know, basically, once they figured out the natural power that he has, he doesn't see a lot of good pitches. And as a result of that, I think he's gotten frustrated. Because, again, I think one of the things that defines Bryce Harper is his stubbornness. He's bullheaded. Maybe he's going to change when he hits 30 years old. But right now, he's just convinced that, you know, he can pop that ball over the fence. And if he doesn't, he's going to come up and do it again. And he's not getting good pitches. You get impatient and you end up with either a lot of walks or whatever. He has not, interestingly, in this worst year of his career, he has not gotten thrown out of a game yet, which wasn't that unusual for Bryce Harper. He does lose his temper a lot. And I read this in one of the pieces that so far he's not had any temper incidences. And if he continues, this will be the first year that he goes a whole year and doesn't get thrown out of a game. So, apparently he's handling it. I don't know if he's doing Zen exercises or whatever. But we'll see when the free agency comes. I agree with Mike that there'll be something shaved off when the offers are made. It's still going to end up being a monster offer. And somebody's going to be willing to look the other way because they're going to say, well, go check out 2017 and 2016 and 2015. But I do think there's something shaved off here. I think it's if he continues the rest of the year this way, it is going to give a little pause to the biggest deal in the history of baseball to be made.
And Mitch, think about something, okay? Now I've got J.D. Martinez's stat line. And he's hitting 116 points higher. He has 113 hits this year. He has 28 home runs. He has 79 RBIs. His OPS is 1.036, and his on-base percentage is nearly 400. And think about something. Nobody would have ever thought of him as a $400 million player in waiting. And Bob, when did he sign? When did he sign with the Red Sox? To me, for all of our Bryce stuff, and he's a leading man, and I get all that, J.D. Martinez didn't have a job, right, when spring training started?
Right. And by the way, he's only the second best player on this team.
Well, are you saying, Mike, and I'm asking this, that there's a chance that Bryce Harper, we could have a thing where we're talking on the Sports Reporters podcast about, I can't believe Bryce Harper hasn't signed yet. I can't believe, look at what month we're in here now.
No,
and I can't.
No.
And they're not going to leave him sitting on the shelf like
Martinez. I'm just saying that nobody would think of J.D. You think of the perception we've had of Bryce Harper, even though he's only 25, for a long time, okay? Except, and Bob knows this, and the numbers, Mitch, the numbers are crazy. Over the last 162, J.D. Martinez looks like one of the great hitters of all time. All I'm saying is I don't think Harper's going to take a big haircut. But I think a lot of these, I just think a lot of free agents going forward are there's going to be a rude awakening because of all the metrics Bobby just talked about. Okay. And everybody's going to weigh all this stuff. Do I think Bryce Harper's going to get paid? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to get paid what we thought he was going to get paid a year ago? Absolutely not.
Interesting to note that he came into the league at 19 and hit 270. Yeah, the first year he walked into the league and hit 270. So there is, it is fair to say that he is underperforming. Okay, he walked in. He couldn't even buy a drink at the bar after the game was over, and he was hitting 270. Okay, just pointing that out.
This is shocking. As you creep down toward the Mendoza line, it's startling and it's disturbing, and there's no question. But it's
all right. Let's talk about Machado.
Deleterious,
Bob. Yes, Machado to the Yankees. What? How would that be greeted
in Red Sox Nation?
Well, I think savvy fans would say, thank God it wasn't a good pitcher. I mean, it's dessert, right? It's a nice, wonderful dessert after you've polished off the big meal. And then, by the way, now we have an award-winning dessert, by the way. Would you like some more? I don't know if I really need it. Oh, but we are noted for our strawberry shortcake. Okay, I'll have some. He's the strawberry shortcake on a team that's already a filet mignon lineup. But they do need a pitcher. I mean, frankly, I'd welcome him on the Yankees if it means that they aren't going to get a pitcher. If I were a Red Sox fan, and I am.
What are the Yankees rumored to be offering for him?
Nobody knows. They have a deep well of young talent now, which has been transformed over the last 3 years. They have gone from having a just okay farm system to a very deep farm system, and a lot of it started with the deals that Brian Cashman made to the trade deadline before the last one, where he traded Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman, even though he ended up getting Chapman back. So no one knows, okay, what they are offering. No one knows for sure what the Brewers are offering. I hear that the Diamondbacks are in this, but I think what you've been reading in New York this week and what I've been hearing from baseball people is Brian Cashman is looking at the field. And if you can't, there's one Verlander, okay, one Verlander equivalent who may or may not be in play, and I don't think the Mets would ever trade him to the Yankees, and that's Jake DeGrom, okay, who is having an off-the-hook season for a bad baseball team. And if you're asking me, is there a starting pitcher who's a game changer? It is absolutely DeGrom, who is 4 years younger right now than what Verlander was when he got to Houston last year. And I think that when the Yankees are looking at this, and here's the question, I want to ask you both this, okay? Can you hit your weight? Could you outscore everybody to the World Series with the kind of bullpen that the Yankees have? Because, but Bobby, I'll ask you this, okay? When was the last time somebody really bludgeoned their way? Hit their way more than pitch their way
I
to
think
the World
about
Series.
This,
I'm looking
I,
at
Mike. I've gone over this in my head on many occasions over the years, and the answer is in my lifetime never. Never.
Right.
Think about the great hitting teams, the lumber company, those Pirates. There's a few other. No, I mean the Big Red Machine. You could make an argument about the Big Red Machine, but they were the first team built around a bullpen, if you remember. So
yes,
they got by with, and it had one ace starter in Gullit, but the bullpen. Sparky was ahead of his time in the use of a bullpen and middle relievers being important. But anyway, the answer is never.
Maybe the 61 Yankees, Bob. Maybe the 61 Yankees.
Well, Whitey was 25 and 4.
And Mantle,
Luis Arroyo
and
was 15 and 5 in that historic comeback. Whitey was 20. That was Whitey's year, 25 and 4.
But they did hit all those home runs.
Oh, yeah, 240 home runs and six. Absolutely. So you can, but it wasn't like they were bereft of pitching.
Well, if you look at what's happened in recent World Series, and how many pitchers get used sometimes in a single World Series game, and you end up using your starters as relievers, you know, witness Houston. I don't think it's possible, Mike. I mean, I know if there's ever a team to try it, and you put Manny Machado on that team.
And Mitch, I agree with you guys.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys, by the way. I don't think you can slug your way to the World Series. I don't.
Well, you can't. I mean, because you can't, no matter how many sluggers you have on, you can't bat them all at the same time. You know, there's still one guy getting up at a time. And if you've got a hot pitcher who's frustrating the team, that's going to trump it. And you just can't, the way that the shifts, the chess games that managers play about lefty righty and bringing people in, you just can't survive the postseason without getting great performances from your pitchers, and particularly your starting pitchers. I know a lot of these games end up in the hands of middle relief and then of course closers, but we forget that, you know, if you don't have a guy who's kind of lights out for at least 4 or 5 innings at the beginning, the game's over already. So you do need great starting pitching, and you need great pitching all the way around, and you can throw as many bats as you want, but I repeat, they only bat one at a time. And the fact that you've got 8 other guys sitting in the dugout whose collective batting average is 3 million, it doesn't help the guy who's up. And if he's the third out of the inning, you're done. So, no, I don't think it can be done. And I don't. I'd love to see Manny Machado anywhere but Baltimore, because what a talk about a colossal waste. But I don't know that he's the answer for the Yankees, given what they're facing pitching wise.
Lou Pellegrino, our producer, just pointed out something, and he's right. Okay, remember that the '88 A's were going to bash their way to the World Series, right, and they lost in 5 games to a Los Angeles Dodgers team that was basically Oral Hershiser and a bunch of guys named Mickey Hatcher, who once batted cleanup in that World Series. And so, Mitch, what you said before is right, especially when you get to a short series. Even though the Yankees believe that if they have the lead after 5, that they can win the game. There's a part of me that believes Cashman is just messing with the Red Sox by floating
Mike,
the
answer,
Machado rumor.
Just going back to the question you posed, has it ever been done? And my answer is not yet. But you know what I love to say? Everything is always true until it's not true.
That's right.
And if there is a team that has the potential components to upset this this chart here, it is this Yankee team with this bullpen, because the fact is that so many games are over after 5 innings once they go to the pen, as more than any team in baseball right now. If there's a team that could conceivably change the narrative, it would be this particular 2018 Yankee team.
Bobby, look at who bludgeoned the Indians last night and their A's. Brett Gardner. Yeah. Brett Gardner, who they had no answer for in the playoffs last year. He's not supposed to be one of the bruisers on that team. Aaron Hicks has gone crazy. Judge and Stanton still might chase 100 home runs between them. Gleyber Torres is hurt. Gary Sanchez is hurt. And they're hanging in there with the Red Sox. And, you know, and we will talk about this from now until the end of September.
Mitch,
one of these teams could win 105 games and end up in a 1-game season.
Mitch, I'm going to ask your indulgence. Well, I indulge in a East Coast-centric, New York-centric question posed for my fellow Boston College alum, Mr. Lupica, and that is the following. Michael, as a student of New York baseball history, where in the Yankee pantheon of second echelon, stalwart, reliable guys does Brett Gardner rate? Who is he in his past life as a Yankee?
Oh, my God. Bob, this is an odd reference because they are not the same type of baseball player. And I was thinking about him the other day because he was a quiet man on, you know, the first great Yankee team after Steinbrenner bought the team. And Bob, the only grinder I can think of like that is Roy White. Okay. And again, it's a historical reference out of the 1970s, and he was there before they got good again. And then he was there when they got good again. Gardner is a remarkable, huh?
Yeah, no. I posed this question to a really passionate Yankee fan 2 nights ago, and we came up with 3 names. I went farther back cause I'm older. First name that came up to me was Gil McDougall in the 50s. Okay.
Yeah.
Second name that came up was Roy White. And the third name that came up was Willie Randolph. And I think your white analogy is probably, I think, but I'm just throwing it out there. You know, he's not, you know, because there's a category on the Yankees that doesn't include the Moots and Gehrigs and DiMaggio's and DeMantles and Jeters and Reggie's. But that's all. What I'm getting at, Mitch, and I'll probably bring this to a rapid conclusion, is I hope that this guy gets his due, Brett Gardner, among the Yankee followers for the contribution that he's made. He is a, I hate seeing him up as a Red Sox guy. First of all, he gets up in a situation that matters. Number one, here's the first thing you know. He's not striking out. He is not striking out. He is going to get that ball. And here's the second thing. The over-under on the pitch count in this at-bat will be 8. And he drives me crazy.
So you're saying he's not Bryce Harper?
Yeah, right. thank you. Okay, now where were we?
Okay. Okay, one more thing. And they got a kid who's waiting, wanting, thinking he could take his job. And nobody's quite sure what the future is going to hold for Brett Gardner at this stage in his career. But he's the kind of kid that somehow made it out, a dirty uniform who made it through the system at a time when the Yankees were spending too much money on free agents and too much money on baseball players. And he is a beloved figure with Yankee fans right up and including last night's game against the Indians.
Well, I'm glad to know that because he sure as hell deserves it.
All right. I'm going to shift the conversation here now to the world of tennis. Wimbledon finals will be played over the course of this weekend. And the men's stuff is going on while we're doing the podcast, so we're going to avoid the semifinals there. But this will be, especially if it ends in victory, a Serena Williams story, Wimbledon. If she comes back from pregnancy and not just pregnancy, but some very scary health issues with pulmonary embolisms, you know, and surgeries and things like that, at age 36 to win Wimbledon, I know that everybody, all the pieces on the board have fallen over as if, you know, somebody shook it and all the top contenders literally disappeared. The whole top 10 fell out of the ranks. I know she's ranked 25th in the world coming in, and nobody believes that she's 25th in the world. But she is on the brink of another final. And is there anybody that doesn't think she's going to win this thing? And at her age, and to have come back from what she's endured, and to look as good as she's not eking it out in third set tiebreakers. She got into the final with a straight set win. And, I mean, I've already said she's the most remarkable female athlete I've witnessed in my time in terms of her pure, just amazing physical dominance. But this is adding a chapter to the story that takes her to another level, in my view.
Mitch, we were talking about this before we started today, and I was lucky enough to get to see her play twice in the first week of Wimbledon. And I will tell you this, as you guys know how much I love tennis, it is a better show watching her now in the late innings. Try to remember and likely will remember how she's champion. Now, it's not going to be a walkover against Kerber. Kerber has beaten her in a big final. They played a magnificent two-set. Sometimes you can play a straight-set match that's very memorable 2 years ago in the Wimbledon final. But the great drama of her career, going for her 24th singles major championship, it is a show. And I think the crowd has come to her. I mean, center court is one, and I say this completely respectfully, center court is back to being mama's house, okay? It's mama's house again. And the crowds came to her, and there were moments in those matches that I watched where it wasn't easy for her, where she had to go back into the past and find those shots and those moments and those serves. And Mitch, what I saw in this first week was this. When she was in trouble, she hit harder. And that was what always set her apart. The only thing that she has been cheated out of in her career is an Evert to her Navratilova, or a Navratilova to her Evert. The greatest opponent she ever had was her own sister. And that's the only thing, and she could not control that I think has sometimes made people not appreciate what they're seeing with her.
But I can't add anything to Mike's analysis. I just want to throw out when all this tumult and the shouting is done about seeding and so forth, and Serena was given this controversial 25. Kerber's number 11, am I correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
Yet, isn't this not in minds a de facto 1-2?
Yes. Yes.
This is the way we wound up with one. We wound up with the best possible tennis women's final based on who they are at this stages of with their talent and their history. Is that we got 1-2? How about that?
Well, food for thought. Chew on this. Her first major win was in 1999. Okay, she actually has traversed two centuries, beating Martina Hingis, who is comfortably in retirement and middle age at this point. She began by beating Martina Hingis, and she's still out there playing, about to perhaps win another Wimbledon. I don't know how you can put it in better context than that. 1999, Martina Hingis. It sounds like she should be, you know, on the sports reporters panel here. And instead, she's still out there playing and coming back from something that she's not the first mother to play tennis. And there is a sense sometimes given her groundbreakingness in many, many areas, that we overcrown Serena and we overindulge. The press just falls at her feet, and the articles that are written about her and the way she's celebrated. Sometimes, if I were another female tennis player, I might say, okay, yeah, all right. But she earns it in terms of the actual accomplishments when you hold her up against other women in the sport. Who starts at that age and is still playing at 36. Nobody. It burns you out too fast.
Yeah, nothing like this will ever happen. If she wins the Wimbledon final, if she wins her 24th major, basically two decades after her first major title. Think about this, Mitch and Bob. The other day, they had a center court program at Wimbledon that had Roger Federer in a match, Rafael Nadal in a match, and Serena Williams in a match. 60 singles majors were on that court that day. This has been the most remarkable. This has been tennis's greatest generation. And it's and the fitting conclusion is that she will be swinging away on the weekend trying to win one. Oh no, she's a great story.
Before we depart, close on tennis, I want to tap Michael's tennis expertise. Just give me overview. I'll just throw a name an overview. We're recognizing that we don't know what's going on at the moment. John Isner.
Oh, Bob, as we've been having our podcast this morning, Kevin Anderson won the first set 7-6, okay? Bludgeoning serve against bludgeoning serve, okay? And I fully expect that this match could go 7-6, 6-7, 7-6, 6-7, and then about, 50-48 with the two serves.
But the career of this serve guy.
No, Bob, his serve has actually gotten better. I've actually wondered for a long time why he hasn't had more success in major championship. And again, it's been like a light was turned on at this Wimbledon. And his serve to me, he's been working with Justin Gimelstob. His serve to me has gotten even better. Oh no. Right now, as we're having this conversation today, they are standing in the middle of the ring at center court and hammering each other with body punches. And it would be a wonderful thing for American men's tennis if we could put an American man in the final for the first time since Andy Roddick lost 16-14 in the fifth to Federer one time.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about Roger Federer, but I know, Mike, you're going to do that in a parting shot. So that's a good way to lead us into that. And it is time for our parting shots. Mike Lupica, lead off.
Well, Mitch and Bob, I know how close Roger Federer was to beating Kevin Anderson in the Wimbledon semis quarters the other day. He had a match point in the third set and then three break points later in that set. And then he slowly began to fade away. He had breezed through the first week. I saw him play twice. And then he ran into a closed locked door in the quarters against Anderson over the last two sets. A big server who kept holding and holding and holding and is the kind of guy that Federer has had trouble with in his illustrious career. Federer will be 37 in August, and no one has celebrated this recent third act of his career more than I have. And maybe he can come back and win Wimbledon next year when he's 37 going on 38. But I don't think so. I don't think he's going to win 9 Wimbledons. I'm not sure he's ever going to win another major. He's been the GOAT of all the other GOATs in his time in sports. But I really don't think he's going to do this ever again. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
Bob Ryan.
Terrell Owens isn't going to be in Canton, Ohio when the Football Hall of Fame class of 2018 is inducted this summer. Poor little T.O.'s feelings are hurt because he didn't get in soon enough. How sad. You know, this behavior, of course, is precisely why his worthy on-the-field contributions were put on the back burner while people remembered what a colossal hole he was as a teammate. What a clown. He's the big loser here. A great deal of the fun and honor when you become a Hall of Famer is joining the club and hobnobbing with your peers on this great occasion. Plus, he's showing disrespect for a class of 2018 members, Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher, Brian Dawkins, Bobby Bethard, Jerry Kramer, and Robert Brazil by snubbing them, which is what he's doing. But T.O. has never gotten, well, you know, it. So why should we be surprised when he doesn't get it now? Oh, by the way, memo to the folks at the hall. If T.O. ever does show up one day seeking entrance, I have two words of advice for you. Call security.
The first famous Isaiah Thomas got drafted in the first round by one team, Detroit, and stayed there his entire 13-year career. The second famous Isaiah Thomas got drafted in the second round by one team, and in 7 years has already played for 6 franchises, one of them twice. He is now reportedly about to play for a 7th, the Denver Nuggets, where reports say he will sign a 1-year, $2 million contract. Now, I know there are ups and downs in sports, but has anyone fallen so fast off the radar as this guy? Just a blink ago, he was averaging 29 points a game for Boston and seemed headed to at least a $100 million deal in free agency. Then came the injury, then the trade to Cleveland, then ineffectiveness with LeBron, then a trade to L.A., then ineffectiveness there. And now comes talk of Thomas trying to rehab his body and image in the Rocky Mountains for a year before trying free agency again. Now, some of this is his health. Some of this is his attitude. Some of this is just how quickly you can fall from grace with the NBA powers. Isaiah Thomas, the guard who shot 53%, is that who he is? Or is he Isaiah Thomas, the guard who shot 43% just a year later? The speedy move maker or the hobbled little man? 7 years ago, 7 teams, soon to be 8th, $100 million multi-year to a 1-year, $2 million contract. If there's a lesson here about the NBA, it's don't count anything before it happens or it's signed. That's going to wrap up today's Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, and we'll be back on Monday to discuss, amongst other things, the winner of the World Cup and, of course, set up the All-Star Game and Wimbledon and all the rest. So we appreciate you joining us today. If you like what you heard or didn't like what you heard, leave us a comment. We always enjoy hearing from you. Tell your friends they can get this podcast anywhere you get popular podcasts. And while Mr. Moister Wicking goes back to his shorts and Bob goes back to his business, on behalf of Mike Lupica and
Bob
Ryan.
Business? I don't think business. It really, is business the choice of word you want to use?
I don't
there?
Know. What do you call moisture wicking? It sounds like business to me. I don't know. Perhaps it's pleasure. This is Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.